Following are comments on William Shakespeare's The Two Noble Kinsmen, Act 3. Give me a sword, though it be rusty, and the charity of one meal, lend me. Arcite encounters Palamon in the forest where the maying celebration is being held. The meeting results in a personal challenge to trial by combat over Emilia. Harsh words are spoken, but Arcite says he will bring provisions and files to Palamon. In Act 3, Scene 1, Arcite enters alone as the forest resounds with people a-maying. He reckons up the blessings that flow from being Emilia's attendant and feels sorry for Palamon, whom he imagines is still locked up in prison. But Palamon almost immediately appears from behind a bush, still shackled, and the first two words out of his mouth are, quote-unquote, traitor kinsman, Act 3, Scene 1, Line 30. Those words are aimed, of course, at Arcite, who speaks kindly to his cousin, but is only insulted the more for it. Palamon clings tightly to his grudge against Arcite and asks him to degrade his courteous language the better to fit his allegedly villainous, unchivalric conduct. Almost comically, however, Palamon still expects Arcite to be more than generous. He asks for, quote-unquote, a sword and, quote-unquote, the charity of one meal, so that he may be in decent fighting shape to slay his cousin. Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 72 through 74. This comes close to the antics of the Monty Python players. And when Arcite brings the sword, let him do so, says Palamon, quote-unquote, with a bent brow, not with decorous words and gestures that violate the chivalric code by their poor fit with base intentions. Act 3, Scene 1, Line 101. But for one thing, I care for nothing, and that's Palamon. The jailer's daughter can't find Palamon, and fears that he has been killed by forest predators. Fearing also that her father will be condemned for the escape, she lapses into despair, and thence into madness. In Act 3, Scene 2, the jailer's daughter searches for Palamon, but he's nowhere to be found in the woods. She is in desperate straits now, but assesses her condition with precision. Quote unquote, in me hath grief slain fear, and but for one thing I care for nothing, and that's Palamon. Act 3, Scene 2, Lines 5 through 6. It may be that wolves have already dined upon a helpless Palamon, thinks the jailer's daughter, a reasonable assumption in a dangerous wood. She worries about her father, too, since he's apt to be blamed for Palamon's escape and sentenced to hang. The jailer's daughter's prayer is heartrending, as she says, quote-unquote, alas, dissolve my life, let not my sense unsettle, lest I should drown or stab or hang myself. Act 3, Scene 2, Lines 28 through 30. She wishes for a quick, gentle death, not a violent one. The text admirably clues us in to the daughter's confusion at the scene's end. She has already wished for death, but, as the Norton editor points out in footnote 6 for page 495, when she utters the sentence, quote-unquote, all offices are done save what I fail in, we can't be certain whether she refers again to suicide or to completing her mission to find and assist Palamon. Act 3, Scene 2, Lines 36 through 37. No mention of this woman, 'twill disturb us. Arcite keeps his word to Palamon, bringing him sustenance and the all-important files to remove his shackles. He pledges to follow this up by returning with swords and suits of armor for the promised combat. In Act 3, Scene 3, there is once again a strange mix of courtesy and churlishness in a necessary interaction between Palamon and Arcite, with the former, as in Act 3, Scene 1, proceeding by way of insulting speech aimed at his cousin, and Arcite, at least, trying to remain civil in a very uncivil situation. At times, the men's objectification of Emilia is a bit much to bear, as when Arcite intones, quote-unquote, No mention of this woman. 'Twill disturb us. Act 3, Scene 3, Line 15. Well, there's another grievous fault we can lay at Amelia's doorstep. The two cousins even jest about old sexual conquests back in Thebes. Shame on us for so earnestly believing all that talk about their heroic preservation of moral purity in a corrupt city. Now the idea is to offer a toast, quote-unquote, to the wenches we have known in our days. Indeed. Act 3, Scene 3, Lines 28 through 29. I'll go seek him through the world that is so wide. The jailer's daughter, now certain that Palamon is dead, and that her father will end up on the gallows for the night's escape, goes insane and sings suggestive folk songs reminiscent of the ones Ophelia sings in Hamlet. In Act 3, Scene 4, the jailer's daughter is sure that Palamon is now, quote-unquote, in heaven, but she is in a state more like the opposite of that location. Act 3, Scene 4, Line 4. In her distraction, the daughter sounds rather like Ophelia in Hamlet, Act 4, Scene 2. Though her imagery differs at this point in that there are fewer floral references and more tangled references to sinking ships and sailing expeditions and other such confused, disoriented speech. Still, the theme of sexual betrayal enters at line 19, with the daughter's imagining of a trip whose purpose is to bring her to Palamon. She will, she sings, quote-unquote, go seek him through the world that is so wide, and she'll do so riding a white horse. Act 3, Scene 4, Line 23. The potential condemnation of her father also weighs heavily upon her. There may even be a bit of King Lear in the jailer's daughter's ramblings, as when she says, quote-unquote, would I could find a fine frog. He would tell me news from all parts of the world. Act 3, Scene 4, Lines 12 through 13. Such understandings are among Lear's interests when he goes mad. The Duke appears. I meet him, and unto him I utter learned things and many figures. The countrymen and their esteemed schoolmaster assemble for the Morris dance they mean to perform for Theseus and the court. The jailer's daughter, now completely insane, shows up just in time to replace an absent countrywoman as a dancer. The Morris dance is much appreciated by Theseus and his court. In Act 3, Scene 5, the schoolmaster, Gerald, has his work cut out for him, to hear him tell of his efforts to whip his little acting company of country folk into shape for the May Day's Morris dancing. Whatever is a showrunner to do with such, quote-unquote, most course-freeze capacities and, quote-unquote, gene judgments? Act 3, Scene 5, Line 6. Norton footnote 4 for page 497 explains that these terms refer to the, quote, coarse fabrics, unquote, that working class or country people wore in Shakespeare's time. Gerald's plan for the entertainment is simple enough, if rather self-centered. Part of it runs, quote-unquote, the Duke appears, I meet him, and unto him I utter learned things and many figures. He hears and nods and hums and then cries, rare, and I go forward. Act 3, Scene 5, Lines 10 through 13. Who knew there were auteur-style directors in ancient Athens? Or should we make that Jacobean England, since the Morris dance is really a medieval and Renaissance specialty, though it has roots in ancient fertility ritual. There's one hitch. Quote-unquote, Sicily, the sempster's daughter, has failed to show. Act 3, Scene 5, Line 44. This leads the company to come near condemning all women, or at least, in Gerald's memorable imagery, comparing them to slippery eels. But just as this problem looms, in dances the jailer's daughter, and as it turns out, she will do fine. Says the first countryman, quote-unquote, a madwoman? We are made, boys. Act 3, Scene 5, Line 76. Schoolmaster Gerald introduces his company to Theseus as, quote-unquote, a merry rout, or else a rabble, or company, or by a figure, Chorus. Act 3, Scene 5, lines 109 through 110. The director's preview of individual actors goes swimmingly, from the split sign that advertises the quote-unquote "more is" dance and the quote-unquote "Lord of May and Lady Bright," on through to the fellow wearing a quote-unquote "Bavian" or "baboon" suit. Act 3, Scene 5, lines 120 through 137, inclusive. The player's Morris dance itself is apparently charming enough to win high praise and money from the seated nobility. Gerald is happy. He need not have worried. I could wish I had not said I loved her. Arcite delivers on his promise to Palamon, bringing swords and armor. He and Palamon suit each other up for the trial. Theseus happens upon the two cousins, arrests them, and sentences them to death. Then, moved to pardon them, he declares a competition between Palamon and Arcite, along with their respective comrades. The winner will get Emilia, but the loser and his fellow knights will be executed. In Act 3, Scene 6, Palamon and Arcite meet again, with the latter delivering on his promises of swords and armor. This time, both men stay within the bounds of courteous speech, though they are no less determined to kill each other over Emilia. Arcite's tone is representative when he says, quote-unquote, "I could wish I had not said I loved her, though I had died. But loving such a lady and justifying my love, I must not fly from it." Act 3, Scene 6, lines 40 through 42. The cousins even exchange fond reminiscences of battle prowess. Just then, however, in rides the Duke's hunting party. Arcite wants to hide and delay the quarrel, but Palamon rejects this common-sense plan, saying, quote-unquote, "I know your cunning, and I know your cause. He that faints now, shame take him." Act 3, Scene 6, lines 120 through 121. But it's too late anyhow. Theseus catches sight of both men and soon condemns them to execution for their disobedient conduct. Arcite for breaking the terms of his banishment, and Palamon for escaping from prison. It takes some persuasion from the women and Pirithous to change Theseus's mind, but they finally succeed. Emilia promises banishment, but Palamon and Arcite reject that offer because it would banish them from her as well. Theseus asks Emilia whether she could approve of putting the choice on her. The man she chooses would be her husband, but the other would die. The hitch in this plan soon appears. Asked to choose, Emilia can't, saying, quote-unquote, "I cannot, sir. They are both too excellent. For me, a hair shall never fall of these men." Act 3, Scene 6, lines 287 through 288. Finally, Theseus steps in with a definitive scheme. The two cousins will return in a month's time, with three picked men each to fight in support of them. The one who can force his opponent to touch the pyramid that Theseus will set up wins Emilia. The loser and his three supporters must die. Both Palamon and Arcite agree with this plan, and all is set. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on Thursday, December 4th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume genre-based format.